Well, aside from Steamboat Willie, by far my favorite cartoon ever. 1969, that one came out, Bambi versus Godzilla. And it gained popularity, not because of, obviously, its immense theatrical value, but because it did something that was unexpected. Bambi died. And then that's the circle of life. But, you know, we don't live in a world where Bambi dies. In our minds, Bambi is supposed to live. In fact, all of the heroes in the movies are supposed to live. No matter how perilous the situation, Jack Bauer still has to make it another 24 hours. Rowdy Yates, Batman, Captain Kirk, it doesn't matter how perilous it is, the hero is supposed to live on, not supposed to die. Now, even though we know there are only two guarantees in life, which are taxes and death. That's right, death and tax. The only two guarantees in life, we honestly don't live as if death is an actual guarantee. Like it or not, death is around the corner for each one of us. And we just don't know how close it is. In fact, it's not just around the corner for you and for me, but for every person that we know and love and care about. And when death happens, we feel robbed. We feel robbed, especially when it's a person that is very close to us. A soul, a heart, a person that we have grown to love. Especially when it's people that we determine, our determination, that it was not their time to go. We fight death hard. In fact, we fight death so hard that even after death takes from us, we still try to hold on to. We don't give up our will and our defiance that death took something from us. And in the process, sometimes we get stuck in grief. Sometimes we feel like giving up our own lives as if it will somehow bring justification or right a wrong or solve some injustice that death has made us have to experience. And for many of us, death delivers with it a sting. And that sting is a painful sting. In fact, doctors say that death can deliver such a sting that it can actually make us physically ill. The process of grief can make us physically ill. And not only ill, but there are some people that actually succumb to death's persuasion. They die themselves because of the level of grief they experience over the death of another person. Others go on living, but in the process, they lose their joy. They lose their hope for living. Some go as far as to take their own life, and in the process, exponentially grow the grief and the hurt and the pain for those of us that are left behind. There's one thing. Someone asked me about death and said, you know, Pastor Doug, what's one thing about death that you know for sure? It's as simple as this, two words. Death sucks. Amen. And I know that's not very pastoral. I get that. But it does. And people that try to make it something other than sucks is someone that's not understanding the depth and the struggle and the pain, and the hurt, and the loss that happens in death. Death is an extremely difficult thing. And another truth that I have come to understand is that death is coming for each of us. We do not know, and we are not guaranteed to another moment on this life. Even though we feel like we're justified in having more, and those that we love and care about having more. But death is coming for you and death is coming for me. We have no idea when. Some get to at least know when death is coming. Some go to a doctor and the doctor says, you've got this amount of time to live. You've got 2 years or a year or you've got 3 months. And sometimes more or less, it's their best guess. But some people get an opportunity to say their goodbyes. Others of us, death will come. In fact, for most of us, it will come as a thief in the night. Completely unexpected. And if you think of people that you love that have died, many times it happens that way. It's difficult. And it's hard. Any moment could be our last moment. This may be the very last sermon I ever preach. I did first service, so I knew I, you know, maybe had one more in me. This could be it. 7 days is a long time. This may be the last church service you ever sit through. Today's lunch might be the last lunch you ever eat. Kind of makes you rethink where you're eating lunch, huh? Nobody knows. And death, if we're honest, takes something from us. It takes away a person, a heart, a soul of someone that we love and that we care about. And the closer that person is to us, the more that sting of death hurts. And death takes away familiarity. It takes away memories, and it takes away the opportunity for future memories with that soul that we love. And death is abrupt, and death is all-encompassing, and death is final. Or is it? It shouldn't surprise you this morning, but I happen to be a person of faith. And as a person of faith, I believe that there is something that happens after death. I believe that there is a life after death. I believe that there's an eternity that awaits us after we die. Now, I've come to this conclusion not just because somebody told it to me, but I've come to this conclusion through my own personal study and investigation, my discovery that there is a God. And in the process that there is a God, I believe that he is a creator. And I believe that in his creation that he has a plan. And I believe that that plan has to do with a life after this life. I've never been there. You've never been there. And I understand that it does take faith to believe in such things. And I don't have time this morning to go through all of the evidence of how I've come to this conclusion. I've done that in past messages, and I will continue to do that in future messages. But you do need to understand that's the basis that I come from. I come from an understanding, a belief that there is something beyond this life. And each person has to come to their own conclusion. And the decision that you make on that, the decision of what you believe that happens when you die on this earth, greatly affects how you view and see death. To reject God, to say that there is no God, to be an atheist, is to experience death differently than someone who believes in God. Because to be an atheist, to believe that this is it, that this is all just by chance, it's just scientific, and somehow we all landed here and developed into what we developed in, and when you die, that's it, the lights are out, and there's nothing after that. To experience that is to experience a deeper level of pain in death than I experience when someone dies. Now, I'm not sure the pain is always measurable, because pain is difficult regardless of your belief in what happens afterwards. But in my understanding of death, there's still hope. I still have hope in the midst of the pain of death. In fact, for a Christian, death is not an end. I would say it's more of a relocation. The moment that I die, what will happen? I've pondered this. I've wondered about it. As I've experienced many people who have died, as I've sat with people and actually been in their presence when they've gone from this world to the next, I've wondered, what are they currently experiencing? I know that when I die and I close my eyes to this earth, my eyes are going to open in paradise. Now, when I say paradise, that can be a confusing word, because everybody has their own definition of what that is. Some maybe would define it as heaven. I also would say, I'm going to leave this earth and I'm going to open my eyes in heaven. Heaven, again, is a word that's confusing for a lot of people, because everybody has their own ideas of what heaven is. So let me state it as simply as possible, and something I think we can all agree on, is that when I close my eyes to this earth, I'm going to open them in the presence of God. Amen. Okay? Now, whatever that looks like and however that is, God doesn't actually give us a whole lot of detail on this. I know we live in a I've been to heaven culture right now. I mean, the Christian community loves these books. And we have all these ideas and conflicting reports. I'm not going into that today. I'm just saying that when I die, I'm going to be in the presence of God. And I'm all good with that. Okay? Now, in this reality, some people say, well, you know, Pastor Doug, I don't know if that's actually true. I think there's like a purgatory or a limbo or a soul sleep or some waiting period before you go. It's not what Jesus said. Luke chapter 23. Jesus is dying. He's on a cross. He's got a thief on one side and the other. Just a little side note, caveat. The scripture does not say there are only three people being crucified. Okay? Romans could have been crucifying 50 people out there. We're only told of three of them. Jesus and the dudes on either side that he decided to have a conversation in the midst of dying. One is a thief that doesn't really get it. And the other thief is very sympathetic to the person of who Jesus is and comes to a realization. And so it's revealed to us here in Luke chapter 23, verses 39 to 43. It says, one of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed. So you're the Messiah, are you? Prove it by saving yourself and us too while you're at it. But the other criminal protested. Don't you fear God even when you've been sentenced to die? We deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong. And then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus replied, I assure you, today you will be with me in paradise. So if you believe that there's something other than that, well, good luck. Death for me is not an end. I've come wholeheartedly to believe that death is a beginning. It is not an end, it is a beginning. In fact, when a believer dies, when someone who knows Christ, when someone who is a Christian dies, there's actually no death that actually happens. The one who died is more alive than they ever were before. I believe that the thing that makes a person is called a soul. I think when you look at me and you say, you know, and I can't help but do this, but when I look at my own being, this is me. But this is just a shell that the me hangs out in. The way I can prove that is by suggesting that one of you might come up and cut my left arm off. Now, right now, this is me. But if you cut this off and you put it over there, and then you say, where are you? Where would I be? I'm still here. That's my arm, and I liked it, and it was all good. But now that it's over there, it is somehow apart from me, but the me is still here. I actually didn't lose any of me. And you can just keep lopping off parts. You can even get into, you know, integral parts of my body, and you can never actually get to me. The thing that is me, my personality, the parts of me that maybe that you enjoy, that encourage you, that inspire you, or the parts of me that get it right in life, that's my soul. And that part never dies. That goes on when this shell that I live in goes away. And so when a person dies, they're in the presence of God, and they are more alive in that moment than they ever were here on earth. And I've come to an understanding that that death is not just an end as we think it, but death in many ways is a fresh and a new beginning. But it still hurts. And it should hurt. It's just that the hurt isn't permanent. Paul had this to say about suffering. He said, we are pressed on every side by troubles, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but not driven to despair. We're hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we're not destroyed. And through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies. In other words, here he says, we're pressed but not cursed. We have hope in death. We're pressed but we're not cursed by it. He says we're perplexed but not driven to despair. I am perplexed in death. I have questions in death. When people that I love die, I question. It's natural and normal. But we know that there's hope in death, even in our questions. Paul says here, we're hunted down and we're not abandoned. And even though death is coming for every one of us, we cannot avoid it. It's one thing we all share. God says he will never leave us and that he's prepared a place for us to be in his presence for eternity. Paul says we're knocked down, but not destroyed. And I want you to know that grief does knock you down, and it's okay. It's okay to be knocked down by grief for a period. But our hope gets us through it. It doesn't destroy us. And as he says there, that our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies, reminds me that Jesus also died. And he was resurrected. Jesus proved that he has power over death, that death is not the ultimate control, that he has power over even death. So there is some hope in death. And even though we will experience grief, our grief should reflect some of that hope. Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 4:13, "Brothers and sisters, we do not want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death." This idea that this isn't a final thing. "So that you don't grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope." There should be hope in our grief. And this doesn't mean that we don't grieve. We should grieve. We do. And grieving is, you know, we live in a society that doesn't want us to grieve, that doesn't want us to be depressed, that doesn't want us to have any negative emotional experience. And we go to doctors, we say, "I'm experiencing something negative," and more times than not, they prescribe a pill, which I'm not saying isn't necessary at times, but sometimes it is important that we go through difficult situations and learn how to tackle them and learn how to move through them without being numbed about them. And grief is one of those things we can't be afraid of. Grief is something that is natural and normal, and we should allow to be a part of the healing process. I would go as far as to say the level of my grief is directly tied to how meaningful that person was in my life. And I know that's a scary thing for some people to say, because we're afraid that, like, if we enter grief, somehow we're going to be stuck in there and we're going to be some weirdo the rest of our life and cry everywhere we go. For a season, maybe. But grief is not only normal, grief is appropriate, and grief is expected, and grief is necessary. Now, the stages of grief. Everybody has kind of a different idea, but there's a basic 5 stages of grief. It's important to realize that we're going to move through different stages of grief. It's the natural process. But if we get stuck in one of these areas, that's where it might be beneficial to talk to a therapist or a counselor or a professional to kind of help us through those bumps. It's true, we can get stuck. But we should notice that they're going to happen and they're a natural part of the process. The first stage of grief would be denial and isolation. Denial and isolation is basically where it's just difficult and hard to accept that someone has died. This is a very quick response and it happens right away. I can remember when I was 10 years old, the year was 1980, and my grandfather passed away, my dad's dad, and he was 64 years old. And he died of a heart issue. And that weekend, we were supposed to stay night at his house, my sister and I. And we stayed night over there all the time. I mean, I knew them very well. We hung out with them. My grandfather would lay on the floor and we'd jump all over his back. That's not what killed him, but it was a very loving environment. And the weekend we were supposed to go over there, my grandfather said, "I don't feel well. I don't want him to come over." That was unusual. Never had happened before. And 6 p.m. that Sunday night, my grandfather died. And I remember being told, and the pain, it was really the first death I really experienced, and the pain and the hurt. And then we went over to their house. And they had a traditional living room, family room set up, and the family room is where life happened, and the living room is where the couch with plastic on it was, you know? My grandma didn't have plastic on the couch, but she might as well, because they just didn't hang out in the family room. But when people die, you go to the in the living room there. When people die, somehow you hang out in the living room. It's awkward. It's too nice. It's sterile. And I remember sitting on that couch and everybody talking and hushed words. And in the other room was kind of a sunroom. It's full of light, windows all the way around. It was like an enclosed porch. And there's where my grandfather always hung out. He had this Lazy Boy chair. And next to the Lazy Boy chair was a table with a radio on it, and directly in front of him was the TV. And he would watch one sport on the TV and a different sport on the radio at equal volumes. I have no idea how the man did it, but somehow he could figure out what was the score on both of these. And, like, that's where my grandfather was. Now, I didn't know as a kid that his heart condition made him really tired, so he spent a lot of time in the chair. But that's where I knew. If I needed to find Grandpa, I'd go to the chair, he'd be there. And all of a sudden in that living room, I knew My grandfather was in that chair. I could feel it. And I jumped up from the couch and I ran to the other room, and there was an empty chair. It's this first stage of just denial, where you just don't want to accept that it happened, where you just want to say, it was a bad dream, I want to go to sleep and wake up and have it different. Or I want to change the situation somehow. And then once you get in through that stage, you come to the next stage, which is anger. And it's anger because you can't change it. You're just mad that it happened. And after anger comes bargaining. Start cutting deals with God. Or we start to say, only if I would have this or would have that. And then once bargaining happens, we hit the part that's the toughest, I think, for us to go through in grief. And that's depression. This is a stage that generally is the longest stage. It's also the one that we try to avoid the most. I don't want you to be afraid of depression. Depression is acceptable in grief and appropriate in grief, because depression means I miss this person. When I die, I hope my family is depressed. I mean, I hope they miss me. If they're not depressed, that's not a good thing. They should miss me. And it's okay for a season to have that sense of loss and that feeling that I miss this person. A feeling of sadness. And then after that season of depression, you come to a place of acceptance. And acceptance is just a realization in your grief that I'm going to be okay and I have to keep living. So you may get stuck. If you get stuck along the way, find some help. But grief is a process and it takes time. And you may not like to hear this, but you need to know this. You will never get over your grief. Ever. But you will get through it. And there's a big difference between getting over it and getting through it. You're always going to miss that person. I mean, my grandfather, 34 years ago, I miss him. At 10, I didn't know certain questions to ask. I knew him as a 10-year-old. I'd love to know him as a 44-year-old. I don't have that opportunity. Some of the little idiosyncrasies that he did, I find myself doing. I miss him. You always miss the ones that you love. And it's wrong to expect that you'll ever forget that person or that you'll never feel that loss anymore. But you can get through your grief so that it no longer dictates your emotional state. I don't wake up every day in deep depression that I lost my grandfather. I think about him occasionally. And he still means a lot to me. And just because I don't dwell on him 24/7 doesn't mean I love him any less. I'm just getting through it, but I'll never get over it. Do you know that Jesus grieved? A lot of people don't know that Jesus grieved. And think about this. If there's ever a person that knew what happens after this life, it's Jesus. And if even he grieved, I think it's okay for us to grieve. In John chapter 11, verses 33 through 35, it says, when Jesus saw her weeping, he saw the other people wailing with her, and a deep anger welled up within him. And he was deeply troubled. Where have you put him? He asked them. And they told him, Lord, come and see. And then Jesus wept. Who was Jesus seeing here? Who had died? Lazarus. Lazarus was a friend of Jesus's. We're not exactly sure, like, what made their friendship so close, but Jesus seemed to really dig Lazarus. He liked them. And when Lazarus died, Jesus went to go see him. He was already dead. Everybody was crying, and Jesus went through grief. Jesus missed the interaction with his friend, even knowing the eternal circumstance for Lazarus. But there was still a grief, a time of hurt. Even though the soul goes on, we miss the presence of today. And God tells us this in Ecclesiastes 3:4. He says, there is a time to cry and a time to laugh, and there is a time to grieve and a time to dance. Polar opposites. There is a time to cry, and it's okay. And there is a time to grieve, and we should grieve. And I wish I could spare you, and I wish I could spare myself from these times, but they do come, and when they do come, tears are expected. Paul tells us in Romans 12:5, he says, be happy with those who are happy and weep with those who weep. Do you know who I need the most in my times of grief? The textbook answer is God. And if I were a good pastor, that would be my answer. But it's not. Maybe someday it'll be God for everything, but I need my wife, Jenny. I need her in my times of grief. Because aside from her and my mother, she's the only one allowed to hold me. And sometimes it's what you need. You need someone who'll be there in the muck. You need someone that'll sit with you when you're unbearable to sit with. You need someone that will be there for you when you make everybody else so uncomfortable. Because grief makes people uncomfortable. And I need my family, and I need my friends, and I need my church, and I need people that will pray for me, that will encourage me, that will support me, and people that will love me. And that's how I do best with grief. The love and support and the care of other people. People that I love and care about. People that love and care about me. It's not the words that I need, but it's your presence. There's no magic words to fix my grief. And I don't need to hear that I need to get over it, because I will never get over it. But with love and support, I'll get through it. I know I've said this before, but it is worth repeating. Life is not about you. The reason why God put you here on this earth is for the love and care and support of other people. And as you love and care and support other people, they too will love and care and support you. But you're not here for you. It's not about you. It's about others. That's the only reason we're here, is for other people. It's important to remember. In fact, in 2 Corinthians, Paul said this about that idea. He said, all praise to God the Father, our Master, Jesus the Messiah, Father of all mercy, God of all healing counsel. He, that is God, comes alongside us when we go through hard times. This is good news. And before you know it, he brings us alongside someone else who's going through hard times so that we can be there for that person, just as God was there for us. That's why we're here. You might be going through a hard time right now. You might know someone who is going through grief. And for sure, each of us either will or will know someone who's going through it very soon. I encourage you to be a friend and be present with people that are grieving. And if it's you that's grieving, allow people to be with you. Allow people to love you and support you and to care for you. And remember that in the midst of your grief, that you're still alive. And there is still life to live. And as long as God has us here, our work is not done. And loving and compassion and caring and supporting other people. And so it's in this spirit that I want to offer you this presentation.
Can I get a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
How are you? Psalm 23, David says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. The valley. It is a depression or an extended canyon that seems to go in one direction. It seems like it would go on forever. You see, we all seem to go in these valleys in our life. We may be entering a valley, we may be in the middle of the valley, or we're about to leave the valley. And the valley, it comes in all different shapes and forms. It can be the loss of a friendship. The metaphorical death of a dream or a missed opportunity. It can even be the literal death of someone that we love. Basically, it is something that ceases to exist in our lives as we now know it. Ecclesiastes says that there is a time for everything. There is a time to laugh, and there's a time to cry. It's that mourning season. It is that season of pain. Everyone hurts at some point. We all feel the pain of experiencing the valley of the shadow of death. When we are in the midst of pain, it feels like it goes on forever. There's no relief in sight. I'm not talking about having a bad day or even a big inconvenience. I'm talking about those seasons when the pain hurts in our bones, in our gut, into the very core of who we are. So where do we go when we mourn? Where do we go with those thoughts of pain and those wounds? Jesus said, for those that are mourning, do just that, mourn. But he also gave a promise that there will be comfort. So for those people that are in the valley with no end in sight, they must be comforted. And we want to help. We want to be there for people. But in reality, there are really no words to say for someone who is sitting in their mourning booth. We try to tell jokes. We think that laughter should lighten their mood. It doesn't always seem to work. If laughter is the best medicine, why does it seem to sting when we're in the valley? And others try to offer perspective. We really don't know what to say, so we try to offer some counsel. We'll say stuff like, all things work together for good. It's true, but the timing may be a little off. Sometimes we find ourselves trying to comfort someone we really love. We say it's time to move on, to rise above it, to get over it, that there's a life still to live. But if we were to really look at them, we'd see their pain. For those of us who can't see the pain, we leave. We exit. We cannot sit in the mourning booth any longer. We cannot stay in the valley. Everyone must take their turn in the mourning booth. However, they shouldn't have to do it alone. Paul calls out the cry for the followers of Jesus, mourn with those who mourn, carry one another's burdens. We must get in close proximity of the person in pain. Never underestimate the power of your presence. When a person is seated in their mourning booth, there is something eternal in gently and quietly taking a seat next to the wounded. St. Francis said, share Jesus with others, and if you have to, use words. You see, you don't have to use words at all. It can make all the difference in the world when someone is willing to sit and share in the pain, the sorrow, and the hurt. It is a holy response.
Was great. that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear, the
to close with a portion of an email that one of my mentors, Randy Reese, shared with me a couple of years ago. It's an email from a Sioux Falls man by the name of Jim Jarding. I never knew Jim. He had a construction company here in town, and he was suffering with a terminal diagnosis of cancer. And this is what he wrote. Randy and Susan, thanks to you and your family for the prayers. I truly believe that those prayers are what are bringing me such peace on this journey. I'm feeling right now nearly fully recovered from the craniotomy that we did. I hope to get started on radiation and oral chemo next week. We hit that once a day, 5 days a week for 6 weeks, and then we get a month break, and after that I understand it will be mostly oral chemo pills. This type of cancer is a common old cancer. No cure. But with prayer and keeping good health, we can hope for the average of maybe a year, and maybe even go up to 2 years. I am working with God for one great year. And then if I get two, another gift. You can't imagine how bright the sun looks each day now. A sense of peace that it's hard to describe. We have a few tears at times, but I really think of this as an incredible gift. To be able to prepare myself for meeting God in heaven as best I can for the next year. I mean, how many people die suddenly and don't get the chance to say goodbye? We're going to make it a good ride, and I want to teach my kids and my family that we can live and love inside God's plan without anger or regrets. I have some woodworking projects to do in the garage, and I want to help John on a couple hours a day with bids and drawings yet, take some nice walks, read a lot, and blabber away on blogs while I can. They tell me that to write what I want sooner than later, as I may get fatigued and confused as time goes on. Heck, I'm much confused now, so that won't change. I just have an excuse now. Stay safe and God bless. And I'll pray for your family as well. Thanks, Randy and Susan. Signed, Jim. 1 year, 3.5 months later, Jim went home to be with his God. And he chronicled his journey on a blog that's still up and blessing many people who are dealing with their own terminal illnesses or the death of people that they love. The things that he wrote day after day and that eventually had to be transcribed because he was unable to write are incredibly inspiring. And in preparing for this message, just reading through some of his blogs were so encouraging to me. So I wanted to put the site on there in case it's something that you might find healing for you as well. I'm not sure that I could see my terminal diagnosis as a gift, as Jim did, but I sure hope that I could. But I want you all to know this. I've lived a good life. I've loved and I've been loved. I've experienced joys. I've had many good times. And I've discovered God's love for me and His grace and His forgiveness. I've also discovered I need that in abundance. I'm not guaranteed one more minute on this earth. And I'm okay with that. But I'm going to do my very best to make every single minute count. The day is going to come when I'm going to close my eyes to this earth and I'm going to open them in anew. And at that moment, I'm going to be more alive than I ever was. So don't shed too many tears for me, because I'll be okay. Heck, I'll be better than you. And I will see you again. That I promise. Let's pray. Father God, we truly do thank you for love. And as odd as it may sound, we thank you for love that makes grief even possible. And even though we hurt with those that have gone on before us, may we have hope in knowing that you will never abandon us. Help us to be friends of presence with those that are going through grief, struggling through dark times. Help us to be open and receptive to those that need to come near us in our times of suffering as well. We thank you for the lives that we have been able to love, and we thank you for the lives that love us. And we do look forward to the encouragement and the promise and the truth that there is something yet to come. We look forward to that day. But Lord, while you still give us breath and minutes and days here, help us to use them wisely to prepare for that next journey and to use them wisely by remembering that it's not about us, but it's about our love of others. And all God's people said, amen. Well, I want to thank you for being a part of this series. I know that today can bring up a lot of different emotions as we think about those that we love, but I hope you feel encouraged by that as well. Next week, we start a brand new series, my favorite series we do every single year called Pastor's Choice. During Pastor's Choice, for the 4 weeks, the pastors get to preach on whatever they want to, and no one gets to tell them what to say. Really looking forward to it. We invite you back to be a part of that. God bless you as you go through your day today. You are dismissed.